So we did an introduction to the equanimity yesterday, right? You remember that? So what's loving kindness about? Nobody knows.
The intention that drives you through the world.
If you use loving kindness as the intention, it will thread one moment of consciousness to the next.
Yeah.
It'll make your life much more beautiful. Otherwise you worry, don't you? Or check everything, don't you? Always on guard. Is it true?
You see that again, just
if you use loving kindness as your motive that threads every moment, there's a much more joyful and peaceful experience of being present. And people get nicer too, I don't know why. They just seem to be all nicer suddenly. It's quite amazing.
They smell that chair.
They do, don't they?
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's really interesting. And you actually see it, which is also quite interesting.
Yeah, it's sort of startling sometimes.
Yeah. So, what else can you tell me about loving kindness? Anything else that strikes you? It's a starting point. It's a starting point for your practice to actually feel kindness toward yourself and then kindness toward others. Can you do anything right? Is it possible to do anything right? Is it?
No.
Do you worry about whether you've done things right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it possible to do anything right? Why are you worrying? We can have 1,000 reasons for why we worry too, though, can't we? Because he said, she said, right? We list them up, don't we? The point is, it's your mind. Doesn't mean that you have decided that you want to be a genius, so you're immediately going to become a genius. It does mean that you have the right to use your mind the way you want to. So if you want to use it for worry, you can. If you want to use it for kindness, you can. And kindness always starts with yourself. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit contrary to what I was taught when I was growing up, though. You know, doing good for other people was stressed more. Doing good to other people was stressed more, and I think my parents would have considered what I thought as kindness as self-indulgence.
Mm.
And, remember that story you told when Rinpoche and some other students were in India, and there was a sick man, and you wanted to You wanted to go and help him, and he pulled you back and said,
"Where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you going? Where are you going? I'm going to help that man. Yeah. Why are you going? Why do you want to help him? Well, because he needs help. No, you're not going because he needs help. You're going because you don't like the way it makes you feel."
Yeah. Yeah. And that story always jolts me because it's like, it's almost the exact opposite to what I learned, you know.
If somebody is continuously fixing everything for everybody else and spending their whole life doing that, mm-hmm. do they ever turn around and ask themselves, if they're not in charge, who is?
Not in my experience.
They might have thousands of fans. They might get the greatest popularity vote in the universe. But will they actually develop wisdom?
No.
The whole point of Buddhism is not just to, like the story about Chenrezig, I think, says it better than anything. When he was just a young tadpole of a bodhisattva, just barely out there in the world, he was all gung-ho because he really loved the fact that he was born into this great career of saving everybody, and he was like really excited, and he got right at it, and he didn't take a break for about 10 eons. He just kept saving people left, right, and center, and he was just doing good everywhere and just like going at it and going at it and going at it. And then he sort of got a little bit tired. He thought, okay, I'll just do 20,000 more. And he wanted those 20,000 more. And then he thought, okay, I'll just take a break now. And he's taking a break and he's having a little, I don't know, champagne, tea. I don't know what he was having. What, a nectar of the gods or something. And he was thinking, well, I wonder how many beings I've helped. And then with his divine eye, he turned and there was like, multitudes, huge numbers, trillions upon trillions of beings, just like huge numbers. Oh God, that's so wonderful. I was able to help all those people. Well, there can't be many left. Let's see how many are left. And whatever number that was, trillions and trillions, it was that times that more. What did he do? Do you remember? He cried.
Mm-hmm.
One tear became white Tara. One tear became green Tara. That's how green Tara and white Tara came into being. That's the story.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a beautiful story? Mm-hmm. No? Yes, baby? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. Hi. So that whole quality of being kind to others as, you know, to do service for others without looking after yourself. It's a wonderful thing to do. But when is anyone ever going to learn the truth of suffering if you fix everybody's suffering before they really suffer? Number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, once you've fixed one hangnail, doesn't somebody just get another one? How many times do you have to help the same person over and over and over again? And when do you use your light for wisdom? This is a real question in Buddhism.
Yeah.
Is there something that is greater than fixing, than the band-aid suffering? And making people's lives easier a little bit at a time? Is that taking away some advantage for them that they might need? A lot of things in my life that happened to me are not particularly beautiful events, but eventually, over time, they taught me great truths, such as impermanence,
mm-hmm.
that true?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true for you, that some of your suffering has taught you great truths?
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Mm.
For you? No? Yeah?
Yeah.
If somebody had taken that away from you, what would you have learned?
Mm.
To depend on others?
Mm-hmm. To depend on others. Yeah.
Is that useful?
No, not really.
Which one is more useful? Learning from what arises or depending on others?
Learning. Yeah.
So if you're really going to help others, first you have to help yourself by showing yourself what is really important to you so that you know how to help others.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Not that you indulge yourself, but you have a sense of kindness toward yourself because you're not using others to distract yourself from your own
mm-hmm.
unhappiness. I know a lot of people who spend a life in service and they do beautiful work. But the minute they're left without service to do, they're freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't stand themselves. Do you know people like that?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's an interesting dilemma, the whole thing about being kind to oneself first. But when you understand what real kindness is to yourself, it becomes morality, you know, honesty,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
openness. Those qualities. Trying not to hurt, cause harm.
Being willing to make mistakes.
Being willing to make mistakes. Well,
yeah,
absolutely. Not judging.
And looking at things and saying, you know, well, is that really true? You know?
And having the right to question, do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, is it really true that I need another blouse?
Oh, yeah.
You know, is it really true that being late is going to cause,
you mean challenging the habitual thoughts?
Yeah, and all the rules,
absolutely.
the rules, all those invisible rules that I believe to be true, or even just questioning the news.
So when you actually have confidence in yourself, it's easy to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if you don't care for yourself first, it isn't so easy to do that. You just add more rules.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
That's why loving kindness is the first thing, and it starts with yourself. So if you can be kind to yourself, not making so many things that you must do or should do or have to do, then you're more likely to extend that to others, aren't you? With an open heart, aren't you? Am I right or wrong or indifferent or 40% or?
Sounds like truth.
Truth, doesn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
Got one vote there. Any other votes? Starts with the kindness. Kindness starts with yourself. If we can't love ourselves, we're not going to be honest with ourselves, are we?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be super picky or super frightened or super hiding or all those things. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean. I hear what you're saying, but there's like a past block coming up. I hear it, and when I practice what you're saying, I'm happier. When I go for a walk, I feel good walking. If I just walk up and down a block, or I walk west on one block and walk east on another block, just so I'm outside more, I feel better. But the challenge becomes, like you say, you should be doing something for somebody else. You're not saying that, but the brain says that.
Yeah, the thoughts are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, at times I'll stop and pick up a piece of paper and put it in the garbage.
Oh, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Because you're doing
that. And it feels good.
You're doing that for yourself and someone else.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. You're doing that for everybody.
Kick a piece of plastic off the sidewalk, or if it's close to a garbage can, or Disneyland says if there's a garbage can within 20 feet, people put their garbage in the garbage can. If it's 25 feet, they'll drop it on the ground.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a certain number, and Disney figured it out by just placing garbage cans that within 5 feet people would drop it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite fascinating when.
Yeah, also fascinating to go for a walk and actually also use the walk good for yourself and for you, like to do that for the environment, to do both.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're doing that for yourself too, aren't you?
Yeah, and then giving the walk as an offering.
Yeah, you can do that.
Is the walk even gets better when you do that.
Yeah, you can do that.
And then the old guilt comes in, going, you know.
What kind of guilt comes in?
We'll call it the Catholic guilt for nothing else, that you're not doing something for somebody else. You think that you're not doing something. There's something saying that you've got to physically be doing something for somebody else.
You are. You're physically walking and sharing the merit and picking up garbage.
But for some reason, it doesn't feel like enough.
Okay, it never feels like enough.
Yeah.
That's the point. It never feels like enough.
But then there's times that it does feel like enough, and it feels really good.
Like, when does it feel like enough?
When you're doing it. When you're making the offering.
So it's later, it's second thoughts after.
Yeah, it's second thought that you feel the
later
guilt.
I should have.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the resident expert.
Yeah.
And that's a different matter. What you do, that's different than the practice of kindness. I mean, with a resident expert, to practice kindness with that, you just identify it as thought. As soon as that voice comes up, you just say, oh, that's thinking. And what do my feet feel like? That's when you. There's a difference between thinking and being, isn't there?
I've said that before. Yeah.
What would be the difference?
Well, thinking, you're thinking about doing it in.
Thinking is basically about past and future.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Our thoughts come from the past, past experience, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And we project them into the future, don't we? I should, and that means future, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And being is in the present. It's like,
yeah.
Bob's watch. Did you see Bob's watch?
Yeah.
It's kind of like Bob's watch. Yeah. Now. It's now. It's now. It's now. What's the difference between being in the past and future and being in the present?
The past and the future aren't there.
That's right. So you can identify that you should have, or that voice, as thought. You're already identifying as not really there. It's past or future, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then you immediately go to a state of being. You pay attention to what the breath, what the smell is in the air right now, what the feet feel like on the ground right now, whether it's cold or warm. If you do that enough times, it just gets so. As soon as that comes up, you just recognize it as thought, and you don't even have to distract yourself from it. You just name it as thought, and it no longer rules you.
Okay, that's when I'm
That's when you're second guessing.
Yeah.
That's when the resident expert takes over.
But that would be similar to when I'm meditating and a thought comes into my mind.
Sure, you just say thought, and then you go back to your meditation.
Yeah, I just acknowledge it, and then...
Just say thought, or that's thought. Meaning, not being.
Okay, now I get you now. You're giving... For the interim, you're giving it a word. The word being thought, or...
It is a thought.
Yeah, but...
You're naming it.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. You're naming it.
So when you name something, it changes your relationship, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's not, and you're actually naming it. It's not ruling you. Say, oh, thought, and then you can move your mind towards being.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you interrupt the thought, it changes it, doesn't it? Notice that?
Unless you feed it. You feed the thought.
Oh, it will feed forever and
get
stronger
and stronger.
And more habituated. It doesn't matter how long you've been thinking a certain way. What matters is when you choose not to. That's kindness to yourself. Being able to name thought rather than be caught in it is practicing kindness. Then when you're with someone else who is worried, you can actually know how just to distract them from their worries into the present moment. What does it feel like to feel your ring on your finger? What does it feel like? What does it feel like? What does that feel like when it turns? Is there a sense of warmth in your finger? And what are your... At wrists feel like when you're turning it? What do your wrists feel like when you're turning it? You keep turning it and move your ring. Keep turning it what do your wrists? Can you feel the muscles moving in your wrists?
Mm-hmm.
What about your elbows? What about your elbows? And what about your shoulders?
Definitely my shoulders.
And your back. And what happens when you do that? It changes the distraction quality, doesn't it? And what does it leave you with? Just being here. And the thoughts are no longer that, whatever habitual thing we start doing, just to bring it, cut through and just be where you are. Immediately you've done that, you've practiced kindness with yourself. You've given yourself the present moment. It's the only thing we have anyway. We do have certain plans about past and future, but you just don't know when the truck's going to go through the green light. Do you? None of us know that, do we? Some little vaccine just hit you when you took that sip. We don't know, do we? So to keep that as the number one priority, and the planning about the past and about the future based on the past as number two priority, gives you a better balance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Does it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it makes you able to be kinder to yourself and to others.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, there's always all those voices that we have about how we should or must, or, you know. We all had some kind of background. You were raised in a family. Your father was a minister. You were. All of us, right? We all have some kind of background. You know, Second World War. My father was from Poland. You know, there's always something that is like, sets a criteria that sets up little voices in all of our minds. That's not the question. The question is, are you here? Do you have the power to change in your life to be who you want to be in the present moment? Or do you want to be run by the past? Always. And the way to change it to be in the present moment is this very simple kindness of practicing being where you are. I don't think there's a better definition for loving kindness than awareness of the state of being. Everything opens up when you're actually feeling kind, doesn't it?
Mm.
When you actually, you know, you ever given a flower to somebody? You ever remember doing that? You've given me many flowers. You know, beautiful flowers in your garden, or, you know, we've gone to the gardens, what are they called? The Stuttgart, is it?
Oh, the Devonian?
Yeah, Devonian gardens, yeah. And gone for coffee. We haven't done it for a while, but and looked at the flowers there and just enjoyed them.
Mm.
Wasn't that a pleasure? Wasn't that just lovely to do that? Doesn't that make a shift in your being, remembering that?
Mm-hmm.
Does it or not?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's, there's an opening. When we do those things, there's an opening, and that's kindness.
Mm.
Kindness is not on guard. You're on guard, you're not kind. We can have 1,000 reasons why we have to be on guard, but the truth is, it's a choice. When we are on guard, we're suffering, we're caught. We're caught in suffering. So then comes compassion.
Could you say that one again? When you're on guard?
We're suffering.
Yeah.
We're caught by suffering. On guard, looking for what's gonna or what should. Is that true?
Yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
real. It's real true. It's real simple when you say it. It's just getting to it. You know, like accepting the simplicity of it.
Yeah, that's the point, accepting the simplicity. Because our minds get so busy, and we have, I am so important, I have all these things I have to do. I mean, it takes a lot, you know, for me to be the queen of the universe. I hope you understand that. We, as queen of the universe, have many things we have to take care of. That's what it's like, isn't it? Because no other universe exists when you're doing that, does it? Just your own little turning, spinning fantasy world. And where is the kindness in that? There's no kindness to yourself, is there?
Mm-hmm.
And is there any kindness to others? Is there? No matter how much you plan it and run through all your list of to-dos and do them.
It occurs to me that being open has got nothing to do with being right.
Has nothing to do with being right.
So if you're trying to get it right, you're screwed. Because
if you're playing with getting it right, you're not screwed. But if you're trying to because you have to, you're suffering.
Or if you're
suffering.
If you've always gotten it wrong and you've got this thing about wanting to be right, wanting to understand it perfectly, whatever, it's a losing battle because it ain't going to happen because you can't be open.
Yeah. What is it anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you said, just recalling the flowers, I had this, I could almost smell it. Being in the tropical room at Matar Gardens, for example, just all of a sudden that sense of in the middle of winter, and suddenly it's you know, moist air. And
it's beautiful there. It's beautiful there. It's a real treasure, that place, isn't it? Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to actually let yourself just be in the being state there. You know, have a cup of coffee and just watch everybody walking by with a smile on their face because they're all happy to be there. Oh, by the way, Janelle says hello and gives you all her love. And she's tomorrow at noon, she's going on her holiday. She's going on a week's retreat by herself in the mountains. And it's long overdue, and she really needs it. And I told her we were all very happy for her, because I'm sure that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Dr. Ong sends his regards.
Oh, thank you.
I saw him today. He wanted me to pass on a warm, loving hello.
So does that give you a sense of loving kindness again in a
mm-hmm.
different way?
Yes.
And why it isn't about what you should do. It's about being in the present, because what you should do is a thought. Isn't it?
Mm. Thought comes to mind when you're talking about that. My frustration with doing jigsaw puzzles. Because I always want to be able to do them. I can't. I just get frustrated. And
what is the problem? You have trouble with sitting still with them? Or
just they're not fitting together.
Oh, because the pieces don't fit?
Yeah. And in looking at them, and why don't I see the right one?
Oh.
Why can't I find the right piece? Why can't I get the piece that goes in that spot? Out of 999.
You don't
pages.
Understand the number one rule about jigsaw puzzles. Shall I tell it to you? It's a secret amongst mm-hmm. jigsaw puzzle lovers, but this is the truth. If you are looking for one particular piece, that's the sure way to find a piece that fits anywhere else in the puzzle. So as soon as you try and you think you got the right one, then hold on to that piece because it won't fit there. But just play around and just let your hand just kind of go, and all of a sudden it'll go pop into some other place.
That's what I was getting out of what you were saying. That you take your mind off of, I gotta get it.
Yeah.
But
this is true. Isn't this
true
of jigsaw puzzles?
Yeah.
We all know this, anybody who's said jigsaw puzzles. That
okay,
if you can find the exact right piece for that and you put it in and it doesn't work, you know that you picked that up for some reason. It ain't for that place. Your depth mind is doing the work. Thank you very much. And would you kindly just play around and it will go somewhere. Especially those ones that are almost all one color or something. You know, those are disgusting colors. Oh,
remember seeing that one with the great big circle in the middle?
Oh, yes. I remember that one.
Yeah. Covered the whole table in the back room.
Okay, so much for jigsaw puzzles.
Like our lives. Our lives can be like a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, and you never know where the piece is going to fit.
That's right.
So quit trying to make it the
woods and shirts,
where it should be.
It.
Let it be where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that give you a better sense of loving kindness?
Yes.
It's more about being than about a list of what one should do. It's more about trusting your being, trusting yourself in the moment, trusting your own beauty. Why not? After all, you are beautiful. Might as well trust it. Huh? Doesn't that make sense? Yeah. It's true though. I mean, this is it. This is the breath we have. Do you want to die hating your last breath, or do you want to die being grateful to have it? Which is more interesting, you know? Which is more joyful? How to use your life joyfully? How to use your breath joyfully? That's a really interesting question, isn't it? It's important, isn't it? To actually be kind to oneself. Give oneself the moment. Not let the brain take over. Brain's wonderful, but boy, it tends to get a little overwrought. I love the way that word is pronounced. R-O-T. Oh no, sorry. W. Thank you. I know, I'm bad. So what about compassion? Like, can you tell me about compassion?
Being present with loving kindness, regardless of circumstance. Being present without regard for circumstance.
I'm not quite following that in a very pragmatic way.
Well, for example, John had a story about being in the hospital with a man who was dying, and the only thing she could do was sit with him and be present. She couldn't fix him. She couldn't.
That's right.
It just, regardless of the other circumstances, just be present.
Okay. In that case, I understand that if you are saying that whatever arises is impermanent. Death is a process. It finishes at some point, doesn't it? Life is a process. It's impermanent. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Suffering is basically the biggest problem with suffering. What's the biggest problem with suffering?
Fokai.
What is the biggest problem with suffering?
Not wanting it to be present.
Disliking it.
Disliking it. Having an opinion about it.
Your body has two sensations in terms of feeling. Pleasure and pain. This is Buddhism 101. Your mind has three sensations in terms of feeling. What are they?
Like, dislike, and
neutral.
Don't care.
No, not don't care. Neutral.
Neutral. Yeah, right. Okay. Yes, I get
it. Neutral. Allows everything to be there without judgment. That's neutral. It's not don't care. It's without preference. That's profound. If you pinch yourself or if you are in pain and you concentrate on that pain, what happens?
It's stronger.
It gets way stronger, doesn't it?
Yes.
If you pinch yourself or are involved in pain, and you like it, that makes you a sadomasochist, right? Which isn't much better, is it? I know people who do that, actually. It's very strange. But if you pinch yourself, or if you're caught in some painful circumstance, and you just see it as an experience that's arising, one of the things you know right away is that it's impermanent, don't you? Because you can feel its intensity changing. Mm. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The real basic truth of compassion is trusting impermanence. There is no such thing as eons in hell. There is a mind state that clings to hating the circumstance, which is, therefore, like eons in hell. It will feel like that. But that's not what's really happening. That's the mind state disliking it and making it even worse and longer. When we went to the teaching by Sakya Treasing, some of you went with me, and I don't know if you remember, but how clearly he stated every day that they were doing the different hell realms and the different realms. He said, remember, these are mind states. These are not actual places. Do you remember him saying that? Mm-hmm. I found that fascinating. Everyone, he said it. Every day he said it. Mm-hmm. Remember, these are mind states. These are not actual places. You find that interesting?
Very much so.
These are mind states. These are not actual places. We create hell. We create heaven in our own being. How do we do that? By clinging to the negative. Disliking it causes us to cling to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We get stuck, don't we? What does dislike do? What is the strongest characteristic of dislike?
Focus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, boy. Can just narrow it right in. It's just the way those cushions are not perfectly aligned. I can't stand being in this room. I can't stand it. I've got to get out of this room. Those cushions aren't perfectly aligned. I can't stand it. I've got to get out of this room. I can't relax as long as I can. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When we dislike something, we're just drawn back to it. Is that true?
Yeah.
When we're worried about something, we just keep drawing back to it. Oops. So saying she fell on her ass.
Do you dislike that carpet?
I was trying to straighten it, which was foolish because it's slippery underneath. Mm. Thank you. No, I don't.
I'm joking.
Now you can see how that beautiful quality of being able just to zero in on something
is wasted.
It's not wasted. It's beautiful. Mm. Now, so this, see, that's you disliking it.
No, but I thought.
Excuse me? That was you disliking it.
What I meant was, if you're focused on dislike, you're wasting that energy.
No, you're disliking dislike now when you say that.
Oh.
You're focusing on the fact that you can focus on it. Okay. Now you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's different, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Before there was a right and wrong. It's wasted.
Mm, judgment. I hear you.
It was focus. That's
mm-hmm.
dislike and like.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, that's wrong. That's
mm-hmm.
like and dislike.
Mm-hmm.
So you're focused on the fact that you dislike it.
Right.
So, like, rather than that, like or dislike aside, being able to look at dislike and see what its quality is. Focus. Okay, how do you want to use it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those cushions are so unaligned. I wonder what kind of geometric pattern that would make if you were going to draw that. Could you? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Same focus, but using it differently. Not using it with dislike. I wonder who made those cushions. Did you make those cushions? Same focus, but shifting it. Still using focus, still keeping the focus, but shifting it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, shifting it from I don't like them.
From being caught by what you dislike.
Right, to who made them.
To whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Something interesting.
Yeah.
Something that takes you out of the dislike.
But then you got to recognize the dislike.
You can. I hate those cushions. It's right. That's very straightforward, isn't it? Well, I mean,
but then you have to be aware that
when
you can change
is
it.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be aware that you can change it.
You have to be aware that you can change it.
You
that's,
have to be aware that it's a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That there is a like and a dislike.
Yeah, you have to be aware that it's a choice.
Yeah.
And that it's not as much fun to practice anger as it is to practice interest or compassion.
That's a hard one.
Compassion is basically understanding impermanence. When you realize that everything is impermanent, then it's easy to practice compassion, isn't it?
But anger as well, before you learn this, and say that you can change it, it seems easier to get caught in the anger.
And then what you have to ask yourself is, did I like that? When you get angry, do you get angry very often?
Oh, yeah.
Do you? And what kind of things make you angry?
It can be anything. The other driver, it can be I forgot something.
A driver?
A driver or forgetting something.
Or you forget something? Okay, which one do you want to pick?
The driver.
The driver? So the driver in front of you or beside you or behind you or what? Where?
In front of me, the one I can see in front of me.
When are you in front? And why are they going, changing their speed all the time, or?
Yeah, he's in front of me. So he's either going too fast or too slow.
Okay, if he's going too fast, why does that bother you?
Because I think I have to keep up to him. He'll get through the light and I'll miss it.
Okay, so you're trying for something, is what you're saying,
yeah.
And the driver in front of you could impede that, could cause problems with what you're trying for.
Which?
You're trying for something. You're trying to get through the lights or whatever, and if there's a driver in front of you, you can't be sure that you can see your path clearly, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of what makes you angry or edgy.
One of the things, yeah.
Probably slightly edgy.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you just drop back a little bit and think, that's really kind of this driver to show me how to just work with this state.
That's the thing. Sitting here, I recognize that I have to learn.
But that's not what I'm asking you. I'm just asking you now, could you do that? I used to get irritated, really, with people who ran out across the street. I would think about them for like blocks. And then I realized one day that was kind of them to remind me how I could be so irritated by that. So when they did that, as they went by, I would look at them and I'd say, thank you. Whether they heard me or not, I didn't care. Thank you for reminding me that I have to, watch that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Well, it makes perfect sense.
Wouldn't that be something that you might want to write on a piece of paper and stick up on your sunscreen, sun visor, so you remember it? That every time you get in the car, you could look at it and say, oh yeah, if I get irritated with the driver in front of me, may I remember he's a bodhisattva sent to teach me patience?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be interesting for you to try that? What are you clinging to here? What are you clinging to?
Changing my habit.
Why?
It's not normal. For me, it's not normal for me to change my habit.
Why? Do you wear the same clothes you did when you were 14?
Same clothes or the same style of clothes?
Same clothes?
No. Okay, got it. I hate your simplicity.
Well, that's the kindest thing you've ever said to me.
All these years to say it too.
Thank you. You keep coming back. So the whole wisdom that comes from compassion is impermanence. When you recognize suffering as impermanent, but not a self, not something that you're saddled with, or you're suffering from. Do you understand what I'm saying here? That it is something that is arising in the moment based on causes and conditions. You don't deserve it or not deserve it. It is the beauty of life, the dance of existence. We prefer certain parts of existence, we prefer not to see certain parts of existence, don't we? Wouldn't you say that's true?
Yes.
When you can actually be grateful for the parts that we don't want to see, people presenting themselves to you in little short snapshots every once in a while, isn't that better than being thrown into them with a violence and being in a hell state when you have no choice whatsoever?
Yes.
Isn't that better to like get a little training? Thank the bodhisattvas for going in the traffic in front of you? Wouldn't you think that would be valid? Do you understand what I'm saying? Or are you busy thinking, Miss Gabby?
I'm hearing what you're saying.
Yeah, but are you understanding it, or are you busy thinking?
Probably busy thinking.
What are you thinking about?
The fact that I can't keep my mind on anything I'm trying to think about.
Then why are you trying? Why are you trying, my friend?
What else can you do?
You can feel your body. You're not feeling your back or your shoulders. You're not doing a Tai Chi posture right now, are you?
No.
You're not present, being grateful that you breathe, are you? You're feeling unhappy, aren't you? And I'm so happy you're here. I have such love for you. I don't give a fuck who you are. I love you. I'm not interested in the trim. It's your heart I love. Your brain's all right, but it's your heart I love. Did you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
And that's who I want. Try to stick around for a little longer this time, will you? Just be here. Just feel your body and be here. That's all. We can never do everything right. That's all, period. Let it go. Hold on. Next. Impermanence is true. It's a big blessing. Everything is changing. Everything is moving. Whatever happened to the house my great-great-grandfather built in the prairies? Let's see, that would have been in the early 1800s. Let me see. How important, eh? Whatever happened to the planet that existed before the planet Earth existed? How important, eh? Let's get real here. What is important is the moment. This is where the power is. Trusting yourself in the moment is more important, isn't it? So letting your brain put you into anxiety or fear, it's not useful, is it? Is it?
No.
If this is the last moment, how would you like to die? Any options here? Openness would be better, because if there's fear, I'm going to see everything as the dying process is going. I'm going to see it as terrible. Is that true?
Yeah.
Go for the worst options. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
If the mind is open, like with love and accepting impermanence and compassion, then it's possible that there could be an experience of ecstasy when we let go of the identity, whatever this life is. Do you think that's possible?
Mm-hmm.
I do. And then the joy of knowing that there's nothing to save and no one to save. But we're so trapped by becoming, aren't we? The next moment, you know, got to get ahead of that car, got to get the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. We got that carrot, you know what I'm going to say. which is attached to a string, you know what I want to say, which is attached to a stick, which is attached to the head of the donkey, and the donkey keeps running, trying to get the carrot, and we never get the carrot, and we still keep running, because we still have the taste of the imaginary carrot in our mouth, and we still think we're about to get it. Isn't that becoming? Always chasing the next moment?
It's not really chasing the next moment. It's chasing some idea what the next moment should be instead of just sitting and waiting for whatever comes.
Letting the present moment arise continuously arise.
Fictition, this fantasy idea, like we're the stars of our own fantasy novels. And we're writing them at the same time.
Yeah, we're writing it at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't
go
farther
with
the fictions.
Arguing with the editor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who we are.
Yeah.
We're creating the unattainable carrot in every moment.
That's right. As long as we're caught in becoming. As long as we're caught in becoming. There's no sin in that. There is suffering in that. Whenever we wish things to be different than they are, we are creating suffering, and we dislike that state, so we make it more permanent, and we start looking for it to happen. Don't we?
Mm. Like with memory loss.
Yeah.
The more I notice the big gaps and forgetting stuff, the more I start to look for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or hate them, dislike them.
Yeah. But really, I can't say that 10 years ago I didn't have memory gaps.
Or you didn't have as good a memory as you do now.
Yeah.
You don't know.
No. And it could be the gaps have been happening all my life and I just am now noticing.
It's true.
And what does that, the memory gaps, have to do with asking questions and leading a decent life and, you know, driving a car and, I mean, certain things, but it's not really a critical criteria, like an important criteria, because life still happens anyway.
There is relative truth and there is absolute
truth.
I thought I'd talk about that tomorrow.
Mm.
There's relative truth and there's absolute truth. And they are quite distinct from each other. Mm. Relative truth is absolute. It is, I can't say absolute there, can I? It's very important with relative truth to have kindness and compassion. They're very involved with relative truth. So as much as you are able to use memory, good. As much as you are able to not use memory, good.
Mm.
When you love yourself, you trust that the adventure of a life is valid. That there are moments when you are born where you can't remember your name, and that there are moments as you age where you can't remember your name, and they ain't that different. Somehow or other we always think babies are cuter, but I'm not quite sure why. I thought my mother was hilarious. I used to tell her the things she would say, didn't I? One of my favorite, don't put your foot down until your face gathers. Isn't that beautiful?
Mm.
Mom, why are you disagreeing with everything I say? No matter what I say, you disagree with me. Well, that's good, dear, because then that gives you more ways to come back and think of a new way to say something. Oh, okay. But we were talking about your bus tickets. Okay. I used to write them all down because it was so beautiful, things she would say. And when you actually do start losing your memory and relax about it, the real wisdom of your being starts speaking. Because your fucking intellect is out of the way. Mm. The one that's trying to be right. And you're speaking more from the heart. The heart language is more what comes out. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You all know that, don't you? You've seen that in people, haven't you? Like your grandparents or anything, haven't you? No? Nobody has noticed that?
Oh, yes. Hmm. My father.
Mm-hmm. A kind of a wisdom that you is sort of quite wonderful in a certain way. It's not logical, but it's somehow about it, it rings truer. Mm-hmm. Because then when your intellect doesn't have quite the keenness that it had, your heart's more close to your lips. Mm. Has a little bit more say in the matter.
Mm. 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 I love the way you phrased that.
That's valuable. That's the way children talk, isn't it, when they're learning how to talk? Mm-hmm. They say funny things.
Yeah.
And they say the truth, too. They say what they feel. They're much more in the moment.
So our life is bookended with the same magic at both ends. And the center is a little dull because we're so brilliant. Just have to put up with that part. Things get real again toward the ends. I hope that gives you a different perspective, does it?
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
Are you back to worrying?
Pardon?
Are you worrying?
No.
Oh, okay. What's your body feel? Okay. What is your body feeling?
I'm just thinking about it. So.
Yeah. Is the right side or the left side warmer?
They both feel about the same.
Oh, yeah? Well, does one side feel bigger than the other?
Yeah.
Which one? The right one. Right feels bigger. Mm-hmm. Does the left feel less clear or the right feel more clear? Less clear. Interesting.
And neither feels particularly clear.
But interesting, though. Was this a shift there? Did you feel that? A different feeling in your body, just for a minute. So, overtime. Any last questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
If you're good, a minute.
Yeah.
The hell realm.
Mm-hmm.
You caught me on the. Caught an interest, and I can't remember what it was now when you were talking about the hell realm.
I said the hell states are when you dislike suffering. When you dislike something, when something is happening and you dislike it. When there's something that you would prefer not to see or not, you know, something interrupts whatever you're enjoying or whatever you think you're on about and you dislike it, that's a hell realm. And they are actually not actual places. They're created by the mind.
real. They're only real in your mind when you're in them.
Whatever is arising in your mind is real to you?
No.
Do you have siblings?
No.
How many?
Three.
Older or younger?
One older, two younger.
Where'd you grow up?
Edmonton.
Where?
Southside, Old Strathcona.
Mm-hmm. So, do your siblings all have the same memory of going to school? Mm-hmm. Do you all agree with about what the school was like, or about the teacher, or?
No.
No, you don't all agree. Who's right?
Me.
Who is right?
I have to be right.
But so do they, from their point of view,
don't
they?
From their point of view, yeah.
So, that's a reality for you, that's a reality for them,
yeah.
So reality is the thing you think about. When something is present for you, that's real. A hell state is from in your own mind. I know people who have been surrounded by beauty who have been in a hell state. Do you know people like that?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah. I'm thinking from the place of you make an offering to those in the, and you're doing your meditation for those in the hell state.
I say whatever suffering there is, may it be. I share this benefit for the benefit of all beings.
Yeah.
That includes anybody.
Yeah, and that's anybody that's in their mind, they're in the hell state. It's not that there's a being in the hell.
There can be experiences that are hell-like, and if you dislike them, that's a hell state.
If I dislike them.
If the person who is in them dislikes them, that's a hell state.
Oh, yeah.
There can be experiences of great, great painfulness, and if the person who is in them tries to figure out how to make it less painful for those around them, they're not the same kind of hell state, are they? There's still unbearable suffering, but the person isn't caught in it. Their mind is free of it. There's a man in the Second World War. He was in a concentration camp, and they had these long, long buildings that they just stuffed people in. And they would come to the doors and just give a slop of food. Everybody would line up and then just slop the food. And he noticed how when the food came, everybody was just gulping it down. So as soon as the food came once, he pushed his way in the front and was the first one there. And then everybody else got their food, and then he stood in front of them and he said, "Okay, watch this." And he cut his foot in half. And he said, pushed one half over slightly, and he said, "Whoever can eat slower than me gets this half of my food." These people are starving. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to slow right down.
Yeah.
He eats really, really, really slow. Takes a bite. 5 minutes, 6 minutes chewing. Everybody starts slowing down. That particular concentration camp, everyone was released at the end of the war. They weren't put to death. His particular group had the most weight, were the most healthy of any other group, any other places. Isn't that interesting?
No.
Because they ate their food much better.
Slowly. And went mindfully. They weren't starving. Mm-hmm.
They weren't dwelling in that state.
Yeah. The mind state was different.
They took the health state away.
He was in a hell state, but he changes it out of compassion. Everybody else is affected by that.
He changed his own, yeah, okay.
Isn't that an interesting story? I love it.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
You know, it's way over time here.
Are you disliking it?
and we got overtime without even going on strike.
You did. You know, there's this extremely beautiful gold light in your hearts. And it just spreads through your body, up your head, down your legs, arms, moves through your room. Fills this lovely home. The yard, the neighborhood. All the stray cats just went, meow. It was right through the whole city. All of Edmonton, all of North America. Everywhere, the whole world, wherever there is suffering. Due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind. May it be. Whatever suffering has been, whatever...
Wholesomeness
has been provided by our garden together. We share it with all beings,
so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering.
Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. So thank you. Thank you for your compassion. Thank you. And we all hope Jan has a wonderful week.
Yes.
Going for walks.
And Jack and Daisy have a wonderful holiday in the mountains.
Jack and Daisy are going for a weekend away.